Hey everyone, this is Wes Colton with the Alpha Introvert. This is our first podcast where we're going to talk about a few issues tying into being an introvert, talking to women, relationships, life, stuff like that. And on the line we have Clint. How are you, Clint?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, I want to talk to you because I'm a bit familiar with your story, and I know that you in the past have, let's say, gone through some social struggles that you've pushed through over time, and I think some of our listeners might be interested in how you achieved your current success. So maybe let's talk about how life was for you as a teenager.
Yeah, sure. Just going back into the background of pickup, or getting into cold approach pickup. When I was a teenager, I started out essentially by being stuck in the friend zone for a couple of years during high school. And as many of you, I'm sure, know, that it's completely just destroys your self-esteem in a possible way. And so that was kind of my story. You know, I sometimes I would be able to fool around with girls, but most of the time it was never the girls that I actually wanted. And so for about a 7-year period between, you know, the years of 15 and 22, I would have this just repetitive thing in my life where I would date, maybe I would go on one date with a girl that I really, really wanted, and maybe the day would even go well. Maybe we would even fool around a little bit. And, but then the girl would just slowly stop talking to me. You know, I'd be too needy, or, you know, something was just generally off in our interaction that I didn't pick up on. And then I just remember going through these devastating cycles of just huge depression, because I knew that it would probably be another year or so before I could find another girl that I really liked. And I'm sure as many of the guys in the pickup community are familiar with, it was just a classic case of just not really getting to experience your adolescence. You know, never ever getting the experiences that you actually wanted, and feeling like you're never even close to getting what you wanted.
Right.
And yeah.
So when did things start changing for you? When did your social situation change?
For me, it probably started changing in my mid 20s. So when I got it, so like I said, between 15 and 22, super depressed, could never get what I wanted, never really had a girlfriend in high school, never had a girlfriend in college, missed out on all these experiences that people are normally familiar with. And then finally, when I was 22, I got out of college, got a really good job, fortunately. And then I started taking a little bit of action. You know, I'd been reading about the seduction community for years, and I was like, you know, maybe I should take this more seriously. This has been a huge problem for me. And so then for the first couple of years, you know, I didn't do a whole lot. I was too afraid to really do cold approach. And so I was mostly just doing online dating. And at least I was doing something, though. That was more than I'd been doing when I was in high school or in college. You know, I hadn't been doing anything in those situations. And eventually, I remember I met a girl on eHarmony, and we wound up dating for a couple of years. I wasn't super into her. I was into her enough. And, you know, for that time in my life, it was like a huge blessing, because up until that point, like, I just thought that women hated me, essentially. And so it was really, really nice to see that like girls could actually be nice to me in some capacity. But the problem was that I just wasn't that into her. You know, I really had gotten into the relationship because I was desperate. I didn't want to be alone anymore. I had already missed all of my adolescence. I didn't want to continue missing experiences. That was kind of underlying the relationship the entire time. We wound up breaking up when I was 25 or so, and then that's when I really started getting serious about pickups.
Interesting. So how old are you now?
30.
Okay. And so do you feel like you've changed over the years, or is it more a matter of you're looking at yourself differently, or you're better able to present yourself to others?
I think it's a combination of both. I think I think pickup is great because, well, what I'll say is I think taking action is great. I think the biggest faux pas that people fall into is just they identify a problem in their life and they don't do anything about it. And, you know, I've always been a hard worker and industrious and everything else. And so I'm a huge believer in the fact that if you have like a good work ethic, that you can basically fix any problem. And so, yeah, I think the people who are struggling just need to get out there and talk to girls, or men who are struggling just need to get out there and try to talk to more girls and admit that there's a problem and take action on that problem. As far as actually being able to relate to people better, I don't know, probably. I'm probably better. I'm certainly more courageous than I was, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. I can talk a lot to strangers. That's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. But I would say that the actual skill set of being able to, I would say that the skill set is totally kind of overrated. I would say there's not a whole lot to it. I think that you have a lot more power than you think that you do. You're a lot better than you think that you are. If that makes any sense.
Sure.
And yeah, as far as me changing, I think the way that I've changed is just that my relationship to it has changed. You know, pickup is still hard. We still go out and, you know, it's still hard to talk to strangers. I don't think that's ever going to change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's probably minimally easier than when we were starting. You know, when I was starting, I was so terrified. I couldn't even go to bars and clubs. I started out in coffee shops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would go to coffee shops every day and I would just talk to one person. That was how I started. You know, that was all that I had the courage to do. And, sorry, I totally lost my train of thought.
Yeah, just so far as how you began with talking to people, how it was difficult for you at first, and over time, perhaps you became more comfortable doing so.
Oh, yeah. And so... Yeah, I mean, oh yeah, and I guess we were talking about how, you know, if I've actually changed during the process, and I think definitely, and I think the way that I've changed is it's not in like being able to take the actions that are required for a successful pickup. It's mostly in just relationship to myself and like my own emotions and like how I feel about myself on a day-to-day basis.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So would you consider yourself an introvert?
Yeah, absolutely. Just by the pure definition of the fact that, you know, I can play a good extrovert, but I need a lot of alone time to recharge. And so, like, being around people doesn't energize me necessarily. It takes a lot out of me.
Right. So you'd acknowledge that anyone who's an introvert probably has a bit more of an obstacle to being social than an extrovert would.
I think so. Yeah, I definitely think so.
But is it a muscle, that social muscle, can that be built over time? Have you found that in yourself, that you can withstand longer periods of socializing than in the past?
Yes and no. I think, you know, for a long time I was going out for 4 or 5 hours at a time. You know, we would do these marathon sessions of 9 or 10 p.m. until 2 or 3 in the morning. And I still can't do that this day. I think the more accurate thing would be just realizing my own limits nowadays and like respecting those limits. And because I respect those limits now, I do a lot better and I'm a lot happier at the same time.
Sure.
But I wouldn't necessarily, so I would say that, you know, I can probably do 10 to 15 hours a week of socializing. And I would say that's probably stayed pretty static over time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's actually a muscle or not. I'm sure if you push yourself, you could probably do a lot more than that. It's just, it's what you're willing to do.
Sure. So how would you break down your week so far as socializing?
Well, so I try to go out Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And that's just because, you know, I'm currently in the middle of this night game extravaganza. I don't know, you know, I don't have any bias towards a particular type of game. I think if you can make game work off the internet, I think that that's great. If you can make it work off of day game, I think that that's great as well. I particularly like night game for a couple of reasons, just because number one, it's convenient for my schedule. You know, I'm at work all day.
Right.
And so I don't really have time to be out during the day approaching girls. Number two, online is okay. But I've always struggled to meet really attractive women online. You know, I've always only gotten kind of the more mediocre types. I've had really nice women online, but never the ones that I really, really wanted. I've always met those in person. And then finally, I mean, there's just a lot of women out at bars and nightclubs. You know, whatever you want to say about it, but there's just a lot of women out there.
Right. So you would recommend people try out different methods. So if they want to go out during the day and approach women that way, strike up conversations, that's great. If they want to do the nightclub bar thing, they should be encouraged to do that as well. What would you say is the biggest difference, say, between doing, quote, day game and night game for you?
I would say day game in some ways, well, so keep in mind, so for my first year in pickup, I only did day game. And I did a pathetic version of day game too, right? Like, so the real day gamers are out there and they're like walking around the sidewalks and they're actively chasing women down and, you know, starting conversations with them. The most that I would ever do is I would just go to coffee shops and sit down next to a girl. And then I would ask her like what she was working on or if I could plug in my computer underneath her. And then sometimes that would evolve into a conversation. But you know, it was a huge hassle because, a lot of times you'll sit down and there's no free spot next to a cute girl. So you wind up like having to move around the coffee shop or like you have to go to a different coffee shop. And so it's really time consuming. But that was great also because you know, day game is really nice because the women don't have this sort of shield up. You know, they're very surprised to talk to somebody because that's very rare in a daytime environment. And you typically don't act like you want anything from them. Whereas in night game, you know, night game, there's a lot more women out, so it's a lot easier to find women. And to a certain extent, I think it's a lot more socially acceptable to talk to people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, because of that, all of them in there are looking to try to get laid or, you know, trying to get validation from the women or something. They all want something from the women. And as a result of that, all the women have their shields up.
Sure.
And so, yeah, you're going to get a lot of nastier responses typically at night game than you would in during the day. And a lot more like fake, quote unquote, interactions than you would during the day.
Sure. But would you acknowledge that during the day, some of the issues of the fact is that they're not used to those sorts of approaches and it can almost be seen as, quote, weird?
Yeah, totally. I mean, absolutely. I guess it totally depends on how you go about it and how you believe that you're coming off. Whenever I've chatted with people in coffee shops, I just always act like it's the most normal thing in the world.
Sure.
After all,
they're out in public. It's a public place. It's not like if they really wanted to drink coffee and just focus on their thing, would they really go out somewhere where there's like 30 people sitting around?
Well, exactly. And that's actually a really good point. And that's a difference, I think, between just coffee shop game versus, you know, just day game in general. Because if you're like out on the street and you're legitimately just chasing women down, you know, you have no idea where that girl is going. She might be in a rush to try to go shopping or, you know, go meet her friends or go do it to a work engagement. Maybe she has to like catch a class or something. But if she's sitting there in a coffee shop, doing her work as opposed to sitting in her room doing her work, you know, there's a good chance that she wants to talk to somebody because she wouldn't be there if she didn't want to socialize, exactly like you said.
So how do you deal with the social pressure, the idea of people watching you when you approach other people?
Well, so that's actually hilarious because when I first started, I had all these like panicky fears that I was going to get kicked out of these coffee shops. And at one point, there's this place in the town that I live, and I think I had asked for the phone number of like 3 out of the 5 baristas or something, and they all said no. And I was too afraid to go back to that coffee shop for probably about a year. But, you know, what I eventually realized is that, like, it's just, like, nobody cares. Like, nobody cares what you're doing. Like, everybody's too focused on themselves to ever care what they're doing. And I even took it as far as, you know, I took it as far as little experiments, you know, so I'm a bald dude. So sometimes I would do things like I would miss spots on my head on purpose just to see if anybody would ever say anything.
Right.
And what I found was that like 98 or 99% of the time, nobody ever says anything. You know, nobody even notices that you have like a big patch of hair on your head and it looks really goofy.
Yeah.
I have also done really goofy things in coffee shops, you know, like, I don't know. like I'll like challenge myself by like getting a really girly drink or something just to see if anybody will say something. And the fact of the matter is that nobody's ever said anything to me.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever kicked me out of a coffee shop. I've never even been close.
Yep.
Even though I have like the loudest voice in the world. And sometimes I'll talk to girls, you know, three chairs away from me, which is really, really obnoxious. And so I would say that, you know, it's like any other fear that you have. You do this like slow process of exposing yourself to it a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And eventually you get to a point where you just realize that it's just bullshit. Mm-hmm. and that it's probably not going to happen to you. And even if you did get kicked out of a coffee shop, you know, it's not that big of a deal. It's like, odds are you can come back. You're not going to get kicked out permanently. And there's probably 10 other coffee shops wherever you're going. So,
right.
I would say that's true for a lot of this. I mean, that's actually how I got out over my approach anxiety originally. You know, like I said, I was too afraid to even go to bars and nightclubs at the start. And what I found was that just by going to coffee shops and forcing myself to talk to one person every day, within 3 months or so, my approach anxiety was probably less than every other guy that I went out with.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I had all those positive experiences, because I found that, like, you know, I could start random conversations with strangers and they would be nice to me.
Right.
And eventually that anxiety went away. Now, that anxiety is never going to go completely away, I don't think. But it's probably one-tenth of what it was when I was in my early 20s.
So as an introvert myself, I found that the easiest way to approach is to approach often, basically desensitizing myself to it. So then I'm doing many approaches and it's not a big deal. Sometimes during day game, the problem is that there aren't as many approaches to do, and so you're kind of building up between them. Have you found that's the case sometimes?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the biggest problem with day game is there's just not enough people to approach. But I also look at it as like it's not necessarily like the approaches within a day. I also think it's really important the momentum just within a given week.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that I do dramatically better if I've just tried to go out to like coffee shops, for example, on like Monday through Wednesday or Sunday through Wednesday. Even if I only talk to one person, or maybe I'll flirt with the barista just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That makes my like Wednesday through Saturday out at the bars and stuff so much dramatically easier.
Right. So it's still a matter as an introvert of being able to recharge, finding some of that time where you're not being social, just chilling by yourself, but not falling into the habit of doing that too much. That's basically what you're saying.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that if you want to get good at something, I think it makes a lot of sense to do it as much as possible. I mean, now I think it's really important to have a balance. You know, I don't really believe in being one of these pickup dudes who's going out 7 nights a week. You know, I think that may be a little excessive,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, you know, if you're trying to learn a sport or you're trying to learn, you know, if you're trying to lift weights, there's just not a whole lot that's going to happen for you if you do it one day a week.
Sure.
And that applies to everything. You know, that applies to any skill that you're trying to learn in your job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just have to do it every single day if you can,
right.
At least in some capacity, to try to get yourself used to it and to get your brain adjusted to what's going on.
So what would you say would be better? Maybe would you say that going out 4 nights a week and maybe doing 1 to 2 hours each time is better than doing like 2 marathon sessions of like 6 hours?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's been our experience, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we go out, it's, I've done dramatically better when I know that I only have to be out there for 2 hours. So
right.
That, like, if I do have kind of a brutal night, which still happens periodically,
mm-hmm.
you know, I know that I can go home and I can still pat myself on the back that I went out and, you know, I did a good job because I did go out and I approached and stuff.
And it's the next day too. It's almost like you don't have as much pressure. Like, oh, it's only Friday, Saturday. I better kill it tonight. You're like, well, I got 4 days. Cool. It's Wednesday. It's Thursday. And I found, yeah, doing the Wednesday through Saturday thing is pretty great because you ease into it on Wednesday. You're starting to get into it. And by the time the weekend rolls around, it's really natural. You go to the venues. There's none of that. There's very little of that pre-venue anxiety.
Yeah, exactly. I found the exact same thing.
In the 2 hours, you know that, all right, I can go strong for 2 hours. You know, if you want to go out a little bit earlier, that's cool too. But yeah, I found that 4 days a week, you know, between 1 hour, usually 2, sometimes a little bit longer, is worth the it's worth effort, and the results definitely come over time.
Yeah, I think the not having pressure thing is key. You know, what you said about being able to go out, you know, four nights a week, and then the beautiful thing about that is that, like, you know, on Wednesday night, it's not a big deal. You still have three more nights.
Right.
On Thursday night, same thing. You still have two more nights. And even on Saturday night, it's like, oh, whatever, I'll go out four nights again next week. And, you know, the pickup guys always talk about outcome independence, and I think that's a huge aspect of it. It's just being able to take that pressure off of yourself. Now, that doesn't mean not doing anything, obviously, so there's always a balance. But I think if you can take massive action while at the same time not really worrying about the results, meaning like not putting pressure on yourself,
right,
then really, really amazing things can happen.
It's a very Zen concept, but it's also kind of hard sometimes to really latch your mind around the idea of like, okay, I'm going out here. I obviously want to meet women. I'd like to bring these women into my life in whatever way. And then when you're not doing it, it's hard to not beat yourself up or at least say, well, how can I do something better? So how do you piece that all together in your mind?
You know, that's an interesting question. So I've gone through these phases in my life where I've been obsessed with various things. So when I was becoming an engineer, I was just completely obsessed with it for about 5 years, and I had no balance whatsoever. And I had the exact same feelings when I was becoming an engineer. Like if I wasn't working all the time, I thought that I was doing something wrong. And so that's, in a lot of ways, that's unhealthy. Because you have no balance in your life. And especially in my case, it was very unhealthy. I mean, I was clinically depressed. I was super depressed, suicidal, you know, all these things. A lot of it just because I wasn't getting what I wanted out of my relationship life at the same time. But I guess my point is that, like, I guess I've just accepted the fact that sometimes I think to get good at something, you maybe have to fall into this place where you're just not balanced. And I think that applies to as well. I mean, you know, I think most people would look at it and say, well, even going out four nights a week is totally crazy. You know, that's a lot. That's a lot of going out.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's something that I have admitted to myself is really important to me. And I've accepted that it is really important to me. And it makes me feel really good to take action on something that's important to me. And so that allows me to put a lot of time into it. And I don't really feel bad about doing that and not spending my time on something else.
Sure.
Well, I'm not sure if I answered your question.
No, you did. And I like what you said about balance there. I mean, we think of balance as kind of walking on this tightrope perfectly at all times. But a lot of times what it is like, oh, you're sort of shifting over to the left there, and then you kind of shift your weight back to the right. So that's kind of, sometimes maybe you do need to be hyper-focused on a certain aspect of your life to get things in order, and then over time maybe you can balance that out.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the psychologists, I think, have found this out too, that, you know, sometimes if you get massive success in one area of your life, that just bleeds over into everything else. And so, in other words, you know, it can be very, very useful to hyper-focus on something for a number of years.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. And actually, you bring up something I wanted to mention. So you're pretty successful in your job. Do you feel that some of the work that you've done around yourself and doing pickup and things like that has spilled over into your working world?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, in a couple of unexpected ways, though. So, I mean, so first of all, I'm a lot more social than your average engineer. And so that, now, you might have been able to argue that maybe that would have been like that even without the pickup stuff, but definitely not nearly to the extent that I am now. And so when you're an engineer and you're kind of social and you show that you can interact with people like a normal person. I know that's a knock against engineers, but, you know, unfortunately, I think it's kind of a true stereotype.
Yep.
You know, you're automatically slated for promotions and management and these sorts of things, which honestly can be a double-edged sword. But in terms of like raw success, I mean, it's great. You know, you make more money and everything else. The other huge thing that I think has benefited me is just my ability to be, have introspection. So pickup is beautiful because, you know, women, you go out in the world and you're like talking to these women and they'll reflect back at you exactly what's wrong with you, like exactly what's wrong with you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you have a really, really nasty attitude internally, or maybe it's, maybe you have a lot of pain internally that you're totally not aware of, you know, that's going to manifest in your dating life in various ways. Mm. And that's the thing that's been so interesting to me about pickup is just seeing, you know, cause I used to be the world as a very statistical person. Meaning that like, you know, in other words, like your internal state shouldn't affect your results or anything else at all.
Right.
And I basically don't think that's true at all anymore. I think that your internal state is almost everything. And what's interesting about my work is that I see all of these people who sometimes are struggling in their careers. And the reason that they're struggling in their careers is because they have, maybe they have some weird emotional thing that's like holding them back, or like a success barrier, or, you know, some weird personality quirk where they wind up getting in fights with everybody.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they don't have enough awareness to understand why they're doing all these things that they're doing, but it's shooting them in the foot and like, and it's really holding them back from where they could ultimately be. You know, they're just not meeting their potential. And so I think the really cool thing about pickup is that, like I said, so girls will reflect back on you exactly what's wrong with you. And because of that, I think you have to be very, very introspective and really try to figure out what's going on inside of you that's potentially, you know, not necessarily causing, but helping along the results, like the many times negative results that you're getting in the real world. And I think that that skill is unbelievably useful in every aspect of your life. Not only work, everything.
Right. Right. Well, that's what I found as well. I've definitely found that things have spilled over, made me a little more used to certain social circumstances, asserting myself, whatnot, and also kind of looking at what I'm doing wrong. I think it can be that balance again. People can reflect back at you, and sometimes it's maybe their own distortion, but it's usually a good thing to pay attention and at least filter what they're telling you, right?
Yep. Well, and even if you go out, yeah, so that's a great point. Because you always, like, you never want to take, so pickup guys are really funny because I would argue that, so on the one hand, they take a lot of responsibility for their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're out there and they know that it's their duty, so to speak, to, you know, go and talk to people if they want to make anything happen. You know, that they know that that's the only way things are going to happen.
Right.
And so on the one hand, it's like they take a lot of responsibility. But on the other hand, it's, again, it's like the paradox. You also want to be unattached. So if somebody's really nasty to you, you know, you don't always want to assume that it was because of you.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you just have to like walk away from them and just be like, okay, that was like a nasty person that you just, that you just encountered. And, you know, there's nothing you could do about that sometimes.
Right.
You know, those people are out there and you're going to run into them. You can't avoid running into them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's a bit of both. I think I talked to a therapist one time who had a great expression, which was that, you know, you should try to lightly examine what went wrong in a given situation. And what she meant by that was to try to, you know, to try to examine maybe what part of it that you, like what part you played in whatever happened.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, not, you know, not going so far as to completely blaming yourself for everything that went down.
Okay. Yeah, it's pretty complex like anything else, but
yeah,
it's worth weighing your own role in it and also seeing there's sometimes just chaos in the universe. And sometimes, like you said, people are just assholes and you shouldn't take it personally.
Yeah. I mean, they're not, you know, a lot of people are not yelling at you, right? They're just yelling.
Yeah. Right. Good point. Well, so we talked a bit about how pickup and being more social and whatnot can improve your life in other ways. Do you think that there are some ways in which focusing on pickup, cold approach, game can actually detract from your life?
Yeah, absolutely. So my journey in pickup has been kind of interesting. So I basically collected it. I started when I was, so I really got serious about it when I was about 25, and or now 26. So I've been in it for about four and a half years now. And you know, and that's approaching, you know, approaching almost every day, not almost every day, but at least 3 days a week, 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. And I've had a bunch of girlfriends in the middle there. So I guess you can not count that time, but basically it's, you know, half a decade of time, put into this. And what I found was that, so in the first 2 years, I had a lot of success. You know, I dated girls that were more attractive than I ever thought that I could get. And I was in serious relationships with them too, you know, like we mm-hmm. fell in love with each other and stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, and a lot of that was just because, you know, I was just taking action. I was finally, for the first time in my life, just taking action. I was talking to a lot more people than I normally would have talked to.
Right.
And I got a lot of success out of doing that. But what I found was, so my last relationship, you know, was with a girl that, in my opinion, was, you know, like a solid 9, blonde girl, kind of my ideal of everything that I had always wanted when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And so we were in a relationship for about 6 months. And what I found was that, you know, we were just bitching at each other. We were just bitching constantly. And, like, it was just not a fun relationship because that's how it happened. You know, we were just constantly fighting with one another. And it wasn't her fault necessarily. It wasn't my fault necessarily. It was both of our faults. But it was really kind of a dilemma for me because when that relationship ended, I didn't know where I was. Because here I was, I had done everything that I thought I had set out to do. And then it turned out that the pot of gold, so to speak, that I got at the end of the rainbow wasn't nearly as nice as I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would say is that, you know, I think that there's a reason. So pickup guys typically get into pickup because they have these deep emotional wounds, either from their childhood or from teenage years or from, like, or maybe both. You know, a lot of the times these things build on one another. So in my case, you know, I basically missed my entire adolescence and my, you know, my college years. I didn't have any relationships that I wanted during that period. I was massively depressed. I had OCD, these other anxiety disorders going on at the same time. I had bullying going on. So, you know, it was just a disaster. And all of that pain made me turn to pickup to try to just take control of my life and try to fix things.
Right.
But, so there's that Albert Einstein quote saying that, you know, you can't solve a problem at the same level of awareness that created the problem or something like that. I'm probably mischaracterizing
that. That's basically it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's very true. So, you know, in my case, I was trying to solve these problems without kind of fixing myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I was acting on the world. You know, I went out and I took massive action and I was actually talking to girls, which I had never really done before, which was great. But I still was coming from this psychological horrible place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was still very depressed. I was still, like, still had a lot of darkness inside of me, still had a lot of bitterness inside of me.
Yeah.
Just the fact that I had to do this in the first place, that this was my life, and, you know, and that my life was just tough, and that I just had to deal with this. You know, all of my other friends and everything were just able to get into relationships without any effort.
Mm-hmm.
That just wasn't true for me. That had never been true for me. And I just had a lot of bitterness around all of that. And I think what happens is that, yeah, I mean, you wind up in a relationship, but there's, like, this cancer underneath it or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're coming from that dark place still. And so I would say that some guys get sucked into that.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that just fucking girls doesn't fix you as a person?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's not only that, right? It's not just necessarily just like the meme of, you know, of sleeping with girls.
Yeah.
It could also be like, it could also be relationships or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I mean, ultimately where I've been going to in the last two and a half years is trying to finally fix all of the issues that were actually in my past that led me to pick up in the first place.
Yeah.
And trying to transcend this, so to speak, and trying to come to a place of acceptance with them. Mm-hmm. And what I've found is, you know, so I was really lost after I broke up with that girl. And I think what happens with a lot of pickup guys is that they get really confused when that sort of thing happens to them. you know, that's why you read about guys like in the game, like, for example, Mystery. Mm. You know, Mystery wanted to commit suicide. The guy's been in the game for like 8 to 10 years. He's theoretically gotten everything externally that he ever wanted.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he gets like one-itis, so to speak, for like a girl, and he almost kills himself over it.
Yeah.
You know, and so that to me is just like the very perfect example of somebody who is not transcended, like where they came from.
So you would recommend things like therapy, personal development books, things like that?
Well, I think it totally depends. I think it totally depends on the person. I've known people who've gone to therapy and like they just don't get anything out of it. And you know, and whether that's because they're not ready when they go or they're forced to go by somebody else. You know, in my case, I was definitely ready for therapy when I showed up there. I was already really open-minded because I'd already been doing pickup for several years.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I think it was a huge, huge step forward. But for other people, it might not be. I mean, for other people, maybe the right thing is a book. You know, maybe the right book lands in their lap at the right time.
Right.
I think the key, though, is to, like, try to dig into your past and, like, really try to gain awareness of why you're doing what you're doing. You know, what drove you to pick up in the first place? Like, why are you in the game right now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do you want a particular type of girl? Like, what in your past caused you to be that way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you still have a lot of pain around that? Is pain what's driving you? And I would say that for a lot of people, the answer to that is yes. I mean, a lot of people have a lot of pain,
mm-hmm.
and they're just trying to, you know, they're trying to rectify that somehow.
So you're not saying that you have to fix yourself entirely psychologically as a person before you go out there and socialize. That's not what
you're saying. No, definitely not. You know, I think in my case, so I went through a phase where I definitely thought that pickup was kind of lame, and that was when I was really in the height of therapy, and I was really understanding these root psychological and emotional causes for why I've been acting the way that I've been acting and why all these things happened to me in high school, it happened to me in college, it happened to me. And I was thinking, you know, why even go to pickup? I should have just done this in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that so everything has its place and everything, you know, everything I think serves a purpose. And so for me, you know, I had to go through pickup for those 2.5 years. I had to get all that success that I had so that then I was ready to actually deal with these deeper psychological and emotional issues.
Mm-hmm.
I never would have been in a position where I could have dealt with some of the things that I've had to deal with if I hadn't had that success under my belt.
Sure. Well, so speaking of that, when you just start out and you're going out and you're talking to women, maybe it's the first time you're ever approaching a woman in a bar or a coffee shop, how do you manage your own expectations? I mean, a lot of guys, because a lot of marketing out there is like, you will be sleeping with whatever girl you want, you know, within 2.5 weeks or some nonsense like that. So how did you go through that whole headspace?
Yeah, so I think that's all. I mean, so I think a lot of us at this point, and, you know, there's been a lot of debunking articles written about the seduction community, and I think most people would say that, yeah, a lot of that's just total bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just marketing and whatever else. I think in my personal case, I remember when I was starting pickup for real, I spent about 6 to 8 months in the house. And it was because I was starting my own company at the time, and so as a result of that, I wasn't going to an office anywhere or anything like that. And so I basically had no socialization, and like I was trying to do online dating, and it just wasn't working very well. I was never getting dates. If I did get dates, I was super needy because I had no like socializing in my day to day life. And I'm sorry, what was the original question?
So talking about the expectations when you first start out.
Yeah. Well, and so I guess what I'm trying to explain is that I got to a place of, I was just miserable.
Yeah.
And I had this voice in my head where I was just constantly beating myself up about not having a girlfriend, you know, not having any friends, not having a social life. And then that voice was extremely painful. You know, but it's true also. It was also true because I was sitting in my house every day just being a workaholic, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, like, that voice just got so loud and so painful that I almost just had to disassociate with it. And so then, after that, like, I got to a place where I was, I basically just told myself, okay, like, if you just go to a coffee shop and you talk to one person, I'm going to tell myself that I did a good job, and I don't, you know, there's no, like, pressure on me on results, there's no nothing, just, it's so much better than where I've been over the last 6 months, that that's all that I really care about. Mm-hmm. So in other words, all that I really care about is the fact that I took action. And if I took action, I'm going to pat myself on the back and I'm going to tell myself that I did a good job. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do the best that I can to not worry about results at all. And I think, you know, when you're dealing with a new skill or a new fear, or you're like trying to tackle something, I think that's kind of the attitude you have to take.
Yeah.
You have to take a leap of faith, and you have to assume that eventually the results will hopefully come to you. But you do everything that you can to make that happen, but ultimately you just don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, that's a good point. Of course, sometimes that could be hard to manifest in the psyche, but I think that's the way to go about it.
It's incredibly hard. I mean, I've gone through phases in pickup, you know, where I fall out of that and then I fall back into that. And, you know, I would say that the amount of time that I've spent in that state is definitely much less than the time that I've spent out of that state.
So it's not like you achieve this perfect equilibrium and all of a sudden everything's awesome all the time. It's kind of like you're always kind of pulling yourself back and reassessing.
Yeah, you're always fighting. I think you're always fighting, you know, and the Zen guys talk about this too. It's like you're always fighting to, you know, be in the quote-unquote, like, good state of mind. And it's not necessarily a permanent thing, you know, it comes and it goes. And over time you hope that you can find the balance so that, like, you spend more time in that state than you would out of it.
Yeah.
But I haven't met anybody who is able to be in that state permanently.
No. Yeah. Certainly not. Well, speaking of state of mind, alcohol. Now, both you and I, we enjoy alcohol, yet when we go out and we do cold approach, most of the time, not always, but most of the time, we're not drinking at all. So why do you rarely drink when you go out?
For me, it's just a health thing. Mm-hmm. You know, if I was drinking every night when I went out, it would just be a disaster. I mean, because I'm out there 4 nights a week. And I think I really like to drink a lot. You know, I like to drink 5 to 10 beers. That would be my ideal.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what I've found over the years is that, so like I said, I come from a history of anxiety and depression. And I don't know how much you are into, like, Eckhart Tolle or any of that stuff.
Sure.
But,
yeah.
You know, he had a really interesting statement in there, and I was rereading one of his books last year. And he was talking about how, like, you know, when people drink alcohol in excess, like, a lot of times the next day or, you know, even at the end of the binge, they'll have a pain body attack.
Mm.
And so for me, from a practical standpoint, I found that to be exactly right. So typically, you know, I'll go out and I'll have 5 to 10 beers. You know, I still do that from time to time with some of my buddies. And the next day, I wind up in a massive anxiety attack.
Hmm.
And it's awful. And usually that anxiety attack makes me get sick also. Hmm. Because, you know, anxiety raises your cortisol like crazy, so you get super stressed out. And then takes down your immune system. And then, you know, whatever viruses or bugs are hanging around can just invade you, essentially.
Sure.
And so, I don't know, about a year ago, I went to Hawaii with one of my friends, and I, you know, I spent, I don't know, 3 or 4 nights with him, and, you know, this is one of my friends who I used to drink a lot with, and, you know, we spent 3 or 4 nights drinking, you know, 5, 10, 15 beers a night, mm-hmm. and then I wound up getting sick for a month after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, standard anxiety attack at the end of all of it. And then, you know, I got sick as shit.
Hmm.
And so for me, like I just view it as a pure like time thing. You know, I want to spend as little time sick as I possibly can. I want to spend as little time having an anxiety attack as I possibly can.
Right.
And so for me, like not drinking is a very practical way to achieve those ends.
Okay. So for physical and mental health, you're not saying never have a beer. You're saying that there are repercussions.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I mean, so typically, like, I can get away with drinking a beer or two and be just fine.
Yeah.
The problem is the binge drinking. And, you know, they've done studies on this too, and they've shown that, you know, most people who drink now in the U.S. are binge drinkers. And, like, so binge drinking has increased, I don't know, by 20 or 30% since 2005. And I think it's increased, like, another 20 or 30% since 10 years before that.
Right.
And so odds are, like, if you have friends who like drinking, like, they're probably drinking, you know, 5 to 15 drinks a night. And that wasn't, like, apparently that wasn't normal 50 years ago, but it is normal now.
That's interesting. Yeah, that speaks to the state of society, I guess. Who knows what
that
actually
something.
Means. Well, so the health aspects, but the health aspects aside, so going out there and approaching, having 2, 3, 4 drinks certainly makes you bolder, more likely to go up to a woman, kind of tap her on the shoulder, and you maybe even bring her around to the bar, take her out on the dance floor. So why not just get drunk every time? You know, let's say you don't have the health concerns, or let's just say get a little bit of a buzz. Why not just put a buzz on pretty much every time you go out?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if there were no health concerns, I probably would.
Fair enough.
I think that, I mean, I guess you could argue that, like, it's cheating or something. You know, I know a lot of pickup guys get very purist about it. And I understand that. I mean, it's really nice to know that it's like, oh, wow, you know, I just talked to that girl and she was attracted to me and I was totally sober. Like, like what, how many guys can do that, can say that? And it's really not very many. And that's really kind of a nice pat on the back, you know, ego boost type of thing. But at the same time, you know, the way that I view alcohol is that, like, so men have been using alcohol to sleep with women for thousands of years.
Absolutely.
And, like, it's almost as intimately tied in with us in our history as, like, anything else. You know, it goes back as far as agriculture goes, as far as I can tell.
Oh, yeah.
And, so, yeah, I mean, like, from a practical standpoint, like, a lot of my best natural buddies, so to speak, are, like, they drink a lot when they go out. And,
right.
You know, I'm not going to hold it against anybody if that's the way that they find success. Now, at the same time, I mean, if you just, like, crippled by social anxiety or something, and that's why you're drinking, which I think is true for a lot of people, then you know, maybe that's pointing to, like, a deeper underlying problem, and you need to try to address that.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think in principle, though, I don't really have any problem with people using booze to get girls.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it certainly works. And, of course, most sex happens under the influence of alcohol. Of course, there's all sorts of related issues with that, but we're not going to go into all those. But would you feel that, I mean, as a guy who's trying to really work on himself and who's trying to improve his social muscle and stuff like that, if every time that he can be social he drinks alcohol, it may not kind of pour over the rest of the other areas of his life because he's so dependent.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a problem. And in that case, you know, the friends that I know who are like that, so the alcohol has just become a total crutch to, you know, to essentially prevent their life from just disintegrating into chaos.
Yeah.
You know, because their mental state is so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Just on a day-to-day basis. And, and so, yeah, in that case, I would say they absolutely need to try to fix that underlying mental state.
Sure.
Just like you would say to anybody else with some sort of substance abuse.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like the famous saying of, like, everything in moderation.
For sure. Well, that makes sense. One of the things that I try to do is, if I do drink when I go out, which is rare, I do drink, I probably have between 2 to maybe sometimes up to even 5 drinks a week. Usually a little bit less than that, but I rarely try to drink when I go out. But when I do, what I try not to do is have a beer right away. So I try to be like, okay, I'm going to be here. I'm going to acclimatize on my own. And then as a reward a little bit later, or say if I find some girl I'm talking to, bring her over to the bar, maybe get a drink with her, or even just wait till Saturday. Like, okay, look, I did the first 3 days of the week, and now I'm rewarding myself. So do you think kind of using alcohol as a reward incentive could be useful?
Yeah, I think that's a lot better because in that case, right, you're not using it as a crutch. You're using it as, you know, a quote unquote pat on the back.
Sure. So like helping you enjoy the situation rather than that medicine that you need.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So I'm not going to keep you much longer, but let's definitely get into a little bit of online game. I know you do some of that. You also go out. When I first started dating more regularly, so I had some girlfriend in college, and then I was kind of out in the dating world again. Literally the only ways that I got dates was from online, and it worked okay for a while. And I had some of the experiences you had where I'm not necessarily finding the women I want, but I did okay. But then when I started doing pickup, in my mind I was like, well, I'm decent with women now because I've had all this experience with some online dating. But I realized I was only experienced like the second half of the interaction, as in I had no ability to strike up the conversation out of the blue, gain attraction, show that the intent, because online, in a sense, did that for me. Here, we already knew she's single. She's already looked at your picture. You both know that you want to date. And so when you get her on the date, it's already like you're already so far along in the interaction. So what was your experience when you were kind of going from online to doing more in-person cold approach?
I mean, like, so if I had my life the way that I would ideally like it to be, I would only do online.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because I just think it's so much more time. It makes so much more time sense than anything else. You know, it's so much less time intensive than any other form of pickup. But what I ran into is that, so when I was in my early 20s, I was basically doing all online. And it worked really well. I was living in the Northwest at the time, and it seemed to work pretty well in that part of the country. You know, you still suffered from the classic things that are online, which is the, you know, low response rates of the man and these other issues. But then I moved, and in my new city, it just stopped working essentially. And so I don't know if it was because, you know, online dating hadn't penetrated the market here as much as it had elsewhere, or people just don't use it here as much because of a cultural thing or what the deal was. But, I mean, suffice it to say that I stopped being able to get dates off the internet with women that I even found attractive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the last 5 years, you know, I've rebounded and I've gotten back to where, like, online is okay for me.
Yeah.
This was, once again, during that period where I was basically sitting.
Whoops. You're breaking up there, Clint. You're talking about getting back into the online dating and you were doing okay with that again.
Well, all I was saying was that, I mean, the reason that I got into cold approach in the first place was just because online essentially stopped working for me in my new city.
Sure.
And now I've like over the years, I've like figured out my profile and my photos enough where like that's not true anymore. So I could still use online to a certain extent.
Right.
There was like a good period there of 6 months or a year to, that was like, it was actually like 18 months where I just didn't really use online at all.
Yeah. So what kind of results should people expect from online? So if they send off, let's say it's a guy who's never done it before, he slaps up a random photo, writes a few random things about himself, and he sends out, like, oh, he picks, like, three girls he likes, and then he doesn't get any response. So, like, what's going on there?
Well, I think, you know, I think the most important thing online is that guys just have to be very prepared to deal with very low response rates. And when I say very low, I mean, you know, you can expect, I think, you know, I know guys who are successful with it who they basically had a 1 or a 2% response rate. So think about that. It's, you know, 100 messages for 2 responses.
Not uncommon.
And so I would say that, you know, my response rate tends to be quite a bit higher than that right now. But the thing is that even if 10 people respond to you out of 100 messages, you know, maybe only 2 or 3 of those are going to go on dates with you.
Right.
So you have a huge, you know, you have a huge fall off in there as well. And so, you know, I think the most important thing to remember online is just not to get discouraged when you do, like when the people that you like don't respond to you.
Mm-hmm.
Just realize that happens to everybody, you know, even really good looking guys.
Sure. Well, because I've talked to women, and let's say some women who aren't even necessarily super attractive, but they're literally getting hundreds of messages a week, sometimes in a day.
Yeah.
Hundreds.
Yeah.
So it's not even necessarily that they're rejecting you. They're just overwhelmed. Then let's say they're in the mood to go back online, and then they just see one. They're like, all right, that's the guy I'll meet. So sometimes it's not even about you.
No, I would say it's almost never about you.
Yeah.
I think, you know, in e-commerce, typically the industry standard for like a conversion rate, I think, is 0.5%. So that means, you know, you get 200 visitors to your site and you can expect one of those to convert into a sale, assuming that you're selling something.
Yes.
And that's just because of the digital era. You know, people are overwhelmed by everything. And online dating is no different from any of that.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. So I'm going to let you go in a minute here, but I would say, Clint, if you had some advice for you when you were in your, say, early 20s, just starting out, realizing you wanted to enhance your social life and other relationships, what advice would you give to yourself?
I would say just take action. And that can mean taking action in any form that you possibly can. So, you know, a lot of guys will watch these pickup videos on the internet and they'll think, oh my God, like, I can't do that. Like, there's just no way that I could go to a nightclub and act like that.
Yeah.
And I would say that that's, you know, that's being too hard on yourself. You know, I would say to do whatever you can in whatever situation you're in. And so, if that means that the only thing that you're not afraid to do is, you know, go and, you know, tap somebody on the shoulder and then, like, say hi and then run away, then do that. You know, start there. And then, like, you know, pat yourself on the back for being able to do something. Yeah, because I think my biggest mistake when I was a teenager was just that I did nothing. You know, and I did nothing for almost a decade. And I really suffered because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, but then when I started taking action, you know, everything slowly got better.
Excellent. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to me and put out your wisdom into the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Good chatting with you.